Having stated in the first lecture on this text from St. Aelred that the goal of the ascetic life is not the absolute or complete suppression of desire, one might say the goal is not the extinction or the extinguishing of desire. Nevertheless, one has to admit that in the ascetical literature, and not only in the extreme and one might say unbalanced examples which recur throughout history, but even in the mainstream literature, one does have people speaking as if the primary goal for the acquisition of a particular virtue or for the attainment of a particular form of holiness seems to consist in the absolute suppression of a particular area that is problematic for them, or that they are considering at that time. And that is very commonly found in the literature. So how do we make sense of this? That on the one hand, we have to acknowledge that in the Christian tradition, in which God has created the world, has created human beings and bodies, and more than that, God has become flesh. Christianity is the only religion in which you have a deity who has united God's self with creation in a way that never goes away. And theologically speaking, we try to use language like hypostatic union to describe this incredible mystery, but the reality is the resurrected body of the Lord never disappears. Deity and creation are not wholly distinguishable in the Christian tradition in quite the same way that they would be in other traditions, in particular in Judaism. God has so united himself, one might say wedded God's self to creation, that that union means that it's almost impossible to consider the one without the other. So from the standpoint of Christian virtue and Christian asceticism, one cannot simply deny the goodness of the body, or act as if the extinction of a natural God-given desire is God's will. It needs to be appropriately used. One needs to find balance. Having said that, on the one hand, one has to acknowledge what Aelred says at the very end of this chapter 27, and that is, this kind of attraction, that is, physical attraction, being attracted to that which we find beautiful, should be deliberately suppressed by anyone who is still assaulted by vices of the flesh, for it will seldom have any effect in them other than to stimulate vices. So there is a recognition of the fact that although it is theoretically true that one is not to extinguish desire, all of us are in some parts of ourselves unbalanced and not able to easily afford the use of certain capacities that will drive us into, if we use the modern phrases, into addictions or compulsions that will render us unfree. On the one hand, if we were to use the language of antiquity, those would be described as the passions, that is to say, those things that make us passive, that acquire power over us and destroy our capacity for free choice. Every one of us has a different complex constitution of things that we can easily and freely use without being driven into craziness, and probably some areas that we must recognize are for us significantly problematic and should not be the things that we are acting as if we can fully express freely, at least on our own, not unless we're in careful dialogue with someone who enables us to discover the deeper truths about ourselves. The modern context where this is best understood, and it is perhaps the best paradigm in the modern world of what the ancient tradition would call the praktiki, the struggle against vice and for virtue, is to be found in 12-step programs. Programs which in which people undertake a program of intense self-knowledge, intentional, regular participation in community, and an absolute clarity in regard to their own lives of that which is for them what in the ancient term would be called the patheia, the thing that renders them the things that render them unfree, and what we today call addictions or compulsions. It may be alcohol for one person, it may be the use of narcotics for another, it may be an addiction to overeating for another. For still others, it may have to do with the realm of sexuality, but there are 12-step programs, models of, if you will, secular spirituality that encourage an awareness of what is called working one's own program, of working with this fundamental flaw, while at the same time recognizing, especially in the area of alcohol and drug addiction, that this is not something that gets cured this side of heaven. Now, that's a very powerful realization, and the fact that the secular world, although one must immediately admit that Alcoholics Anonymous has a profoundly spiritual both orientation and origin, but that's another story in terms of the origins of the 12-step movements. Nevertheless, we have to acknowledge that this is a modern acknowledgement of something that was recognized in antiquity and which we will see again in Aristotle, that each individual must discover those areas which for them are the things that they cannot easily act as if are already in balance and enjoy the kind of freedom that Aylred suggests one might have in regard to here the area of physical attraction. One should be much more cautious and even brutal in regard to one's own choices if indeed this is a fundamental area of flaw, if this is something that has led me into profound problems in the past, if this is something that I'm recognizing as an area of real addiction for me. I think the spiritual traditions must listen to the 12-step program that says that there are individuals, and maybe that means there are places within every individual, in which one discovers that which in this lifetime I will not be able to exercise easily or freely on my own. The alcoholic in AA never graduates to becoming someone who can drink. And although one might say that's an extreme form of an awareness of the issue of addiction, nevertheless, I think Aylred is reminding us of what we will find in the ascetical literature, that at any given moment in time, for a given person, or perhaps even in a given culture or a given period, there will be those areas, those strands or strains of human desire that are most likely to lead a person, lead perhaps a culture, into destruction, and those must be vigorously resisted. Now, we should not go to the extreme of proclaiming them evil, but we might well have to say this is something that we cannot in this age responsibly exercise without a great deal of caution and a lot of supervision. And interiorly, individually, part of one's task in the practice and discovering the truth of oneself is to find out what those areas are for me. What are the flaws in myself that should cause me to have the very great kind of caution that Aylred is describing here for someone who is, as he puts it, assaulted by vices of the flesh? For one person, it might have to do with physical attraction, as he describes here. For another, it might have to do with anger, or a tendency towards being condescending and superior towards others, which can have an equally destructive and devastating effect, especially in community. For a third person, it might have to do with their appetite for food. For another, it might have to do with their acquiring of objects. We need to discover the places in ourselves that render us unfree so that we can understand both that the overall goal of asceticism, of carefully repenting of our misuse of a thing, but not of the energy itself, that in some specific cases must be tailored to a recognition that I may well not, in particular circumstances, be able to responsibly exercise this energy, again, without a great deal of assistance and maybe a great deal of supervision and help from my community.